From the Ministry of Time Machine Maintenance, you're listening to Red Belly Radio. Hello, and thank you for listening to Red Belly Radio. My name is Steve Heiser. I thought today I'd take a look at what the future of Southwest Airlines is looking like. After all, I am in the Ministry of Time Machine Maintenance, and I've been working for some time fine-tuning
Hello. I'm a listener. Let me through. Excuse me. Call this security?
Well, Paul Revere?
Of course it is Paul Revere. Who did you think it might be?
Well, I wasn't sure, but well, Mr. Revere, I'm pleased you could come here today, but I'm sort of in the middle of a show.
Duh, I know. I love your show. Never miss it. It's fantastic.
Paul Revere's a fan of Red Belly Radio? I'm flattered, Mr. Revere.
Well, you should be. My image is on the $5,000 Series EE savings bond issued by the United States government.
Well, not a lot of people see those in circulation.
And the Revere Copper Company that I founded in 1801 is still in business.
Well, yes, that is very impressive, Mr. Revere. Do you mind if I call you Paul? I mean, I have great Revere for you. I wouldn't want to insult you.
Oh, I have never heard that one.
Well, sorry. Is it okay if I call you Paul?
Sure. I understand you Southwest Airlines employees call everyone by your first names, even your CEO and vice presidents. What's up with that?
Well, I guess it sort of started with one of our founders, Herb Kelleher, who said he thought Mr. Kelleher sounded like his dad. And, well, everyone calls him Herb, and it's just become part of our culture. So tell me, Paul, what have you been up to?
Well, I started a band during the 60s and 70s. Had a few hits, including Kicks and Indian Reservation.
But wait, you mean you came back as the pop band Paul Revere and the Raiders and performed and recorded those songs?
Boy, did I just open a can of gullible on you.
I didn't realize they had cans when you were alive.
I love that gag. No, I had nothing to do with the band. What do you mean, what have I been up to? I died in May of 1818. What do you think I'm up to?
Well, it is sort of the type of question you might get asked at an interview.
How about we talk about some of the stuff I did a few years back?
Well, it has been about 235 years since your late night ride.
Has it been that long? I remember it like it was no more than 150 years ago.
Well, let's start at the beginning. You were a Boston craftsman who helped organize an intelligence and alarm system to keep watch on the British military.
Fascinating, yes, but hardly the beginning. My real beginning is, well, a little gray.
Gray?
Well, by that I mean I'm not sure of my birth date. Well, it's around December 22nd, 1734.
Well, I suppose if your parents had known you were going to be famous, you know, one of them might have written that down.
Hey, if this is a your mama joke, don't get me started because I will get in your grill.
No. I just mean that I guess records weren't as great in those days as they are today.
I'll let it slide. My father was a silversmith, and I apprenticed with him as a young lad. I eventually took the business over. Something your listeners may not know, I used to practice dentistry.
That's right. I understand you made George Washington's false teeth.
Perhaps if I were talented enough to make a full set of teeth, I might have made a career of dentistry. That George Washington story is just a myth. There was a lot more money and less saliva in silver and copper.
Well, were you a family man, Paul?
My first wife, Sarah Oren, bore me 8 children. My second wife, Rachel Walker, also had 8 children.
Impressive. Now, you are perhaps one of the best-known patriots of the American Revolution. One event that made the people living in the colonies very mad at England at that time was the taxation of tea. And I know that Wikipedia says you were possibly part of the Boston Tea Party. Can you confirm or deny your activity with that piece of history?
I know not of this oddly named Wikipedia friend of yours, but I can confirm that he is exactly correct. I may have been involved, or not. Only about a year after the Tea Party in 1774, Britain closed the port of Boston and began to station soldiers all around Boston. My son was largely in charge of my silver business then. I didn't know when, but I knew that a revolution was coming, and I became more involved with the Sons of Liberty than ever.
The Sons of Liberty? What's that?
Well, the Sons of Liberty was a secret organization of American patriots in the 13 colonies during the American Revolution. British authorities and their supporters, known as Loyalists, considered the Sons of Liberty rebels, and perhaps we were. Remember that Tea Party we spoke of earlier?
Was that you guys?
Well, I might admit that it was our organization, but I won't admit if I was there. Or not.
Well, tell me, are you familiar with the poem written by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow that recounts your ride to warn of the British Army's arrival? You know, almost every American studies that poem at some point in grade school, or we did when I was in school. I think I still remember the first part. Listen, my children, and you shall hear of the midnight ride of Paul Revere on the 18th of April in 75. Hardly a man is now alive who remembers that famous day and year.
Even though that was penned some 40 years after my death, yes, I am familiar with it. Sadly, many people seem to think of it as a factual account, when really it is, well, a poem loosely based on the events of that night.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. For instance, the poem credits me for what was certainly a collective achievement of three writers. William Dawes and I rode from Boston to Lexington to warn John Hancock and Samuel Adams that British soldiers were marching there to arrest them and seize the weapons stored in Concord. We were joined in Lexington by Dr. Samuel Prescott, but the three of us were stopped by British troops in Lincoln on the road near Concord.
Oh, no.
Prescott and Dawes escaped, but I was detained and questioned, and then escorted at gunpoint by three British officers back to Lexington. Mm-hmm. Out of the three of us, only Prescott arrived at Concord in time to warn John Hancock and Samuel Adams. Additionally, there may have been as many as 40 others who helped out, but sadly, their names have been lost in history. So you see, I was only one player, albeit on a wicked good team. Did I say that right? I'm trying to pick up the current Boston lingo.
Yes, yes, a wicked good team. That was exactly correct. But before you made the ride with your friend William Dawes, what about the one if by land and two if by sea line in the poem?
Well, it was actually the Charles River, poetic license, I suppose. In those days before April 18th, I arranged with my friend and sexton of the Old North Church, Robert Newman, to send a signal by lantern to colonists in Charleston as to the movements of the troops. One lantern in the steeple would signal the army moving across land, while two lanterns would signal the route by water across the Charles. But there was a third signal no one ever seems to know.
Oh, wait, let me guess. On the third signal, was it if they were coming by land and water?
Well, the detail usually lost in history is one if by land, two if by water, and three lanterns if by air. And you know what? Boston is still waiting for those Southwest Airlines jets.
Oh, no. Oh, you really did open up a can of gullible on me today. Yes, Southwest will start service at Boston Logan Airport on August 16th. Okay, so back to your mission. Was it then you rode through the night yelling, "The British are coming! The British are coming!"
Well, I did ride that night, but it was to deliver a message. Yelling would have called attention to me, and like I said, there were times when I was quite near the soldiers. But you have to remember, in those days, the area that would become the state of Massachusetts was a British colony. The people who lived there thought of themselves as British. Yelling, "The British are coming," would be like saying, "More people like yourselves are arriving." So, no, I spread the word that the regulars are coming out.
The regulars are coming out? I never knew that. You know, that's a great story. Thank you for sharing that. So what did you do after the revolution?
Well, I opened a hardware and home goods store and later became interested in metalwork beyond gold and silver. I opened an iron and brass foundry in Boston's North End and recognized a market for church bells. I'm quite proud of the fact that I became one of the best-known metal casters of the day, and my firm cast the first bell made in Boston and ultimately produced more than 900 bells. In 1801, I began working with copper plating and opened this continent's first copper mill south of Boston in Canton.
Well, very impressive.
And what have you done, Steve?
Well, I host this podcast, I shoot some video, and write a blog. I cook chili on weekends sometimes.
Also impressive.
Well, you know, compared to you. Well, Paul Revere, I'd like to thank you for traveling through history to talk to us today, even though it wasn't on a horse.
Well, it's been my pleasure, and I'm looking forward to seeing your aircraft in the skies over Boston approaching the airport of Logan.
Well, that does it for this episode. Red Belly Radio is a trademark of the Southwest Airlines Company. This episode is copyrighted 2009. John Jones, a.k.a. Paul Revere, has indicated that we have come to the conclusion of this podcast. Please turn up and stow all portable electronic devices.
Oh, that was wicked good. Did I get that right?